Sundays on the CW. Brace yourself, superheroes fans, because the bat signal is on. And you won't believe who's swooping in to heed the call. From the brilliant mind of Greg Berlanti and the executive producers of superhero smash hits Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow, comes the most anticipated new series to join the CW-verse. Batwoman. Get ready to meet your new hero, Kate Kane. She's a survivor, a fighter, an all-around badass who plays by her own rules, and she's got the ink to prove it. Batwoman's story begins 3 years after the mysterious disappearance of Batman, when Gotham City is in desperate need of a new kind of hero. Soon after returning home to defend her city from the notoriously twisted Alice in Wonderland gang, she discovers her cousin Bruce Wayne's mysterious lair and his unbelievable secret. With the help of Batman's trusted tech genius Luke, she decides to carry on Batman's mission by becoming Gotham City's new superhero vigilante. From the suits to the gadgets to the fight scenes that will blow your mind, this is a Batwoman of a new generation. Don't miss the incredible new series Batwoman, Sundays at 8, 7 Central on the CW or anytime on the free CW app.
The season 10 premiere of The Walking Dead, Lines We Cross, is over. But we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wigler, and don't you mind me for a minute, because I'm just sitting here making a super sweet friendship bracelet for your friend and mine, the great Jessica Lease. Jessica, I hope you like fishing twine.
Fishing twine is my very favorite, Josh. Did you put some seashells on there?
There's some seashells on here, one that like vaguely resembles a wombat, as is my wont.
And there's like a little one that looks like cubic wombat poop. It's all good.
What do you think? Wombat friendship bracelets? Is this like the next extension of the wombat's hat?
After you win the jacket, then you get the wombat bracelet. Yeah.
What if we have a Walking Dead wand off and the prize is the Wigglers Wombat's friendship bracelet?
I am here for that because, you know, if the wand off can keep me watching Survivor, maybe we need to just like, what do we call the wand off?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't think it's quite as the walk off is kind of, I guess, close.
I think that's been done.
Yeah, I think so. The errand off. I don't think that really rolls off the tongue. I'm trying to think of like who's got a name that's close to Wanda on the show.
We're going to have to workshop.
I know. The Officer Don Doff from
look,
the long forgotten Officer Don.
Wow, that is a deep pull, man.
I'm cracking myself up. So this is a great start.
Wow. Yeah, this is
stupid.
This is why I like the wand off, and I'm just bringing that energy in
here. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, my God. All right. Well, we are not singing. There are no song parodies here, at least yet. Emphasis on yet here on the Walking Dead post-show recaps podcast. We are recapping every episode of The Walking Dead season 10. Recaps are going to be recording on Monday nights, coming your way on Tuesdays. Of course, the show airs on Sunday night, so that means there's plenty of time between the episode airing and the podcast recording to send in your feedback. A little light on the feedback this week. That's all right. We're just starting out. We would like to get more moving forward. So the best ways to do that. Our email address is live. It's working. We've tested it. It's back. TWD@postshowrecaps.com. You can also tweet at us. I am at Round Howard. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. At Post Show Recaps is the Post Show Recaps Twitter account. Make sure you hashtag PS Recaps, and that way we will make sure to find everything. Subscribe to this feed if you have not done so already on your podcast app of choice. If you want to find us on Apple, the link for that is postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Your ratings and reviews greatly appreciated. Jess, we're talking Lines We Cross, the season 10, count them, 10 seasons, the premiere of season 10. And we're going to be counting 11 seasons, I guess, as well, as over the weekend at New York Comic Con, it was announced that The Walking Dead has already been renewed for an 11th season. The great Lauren Cohen returning to the world of The Walking Dead as Maggie was the big announcement. Are you psyched for season 11, or do you got to wait and see what season 10 brings first before you get excited?
I'm psyched to see Maggie come back. I can't wait to see all the windmills that this group is going to build now with all of her knowledge.
Yeah.
And I bet she's going to bring back some sweet records. So I'm here for that.
I hope she's bringing like treats, like taffy.
Ooh.
You know, what is she like? What kind of like sorghum candies have been discovered on the road?
Well, if any place is going to make taffy, I feel like that would be Oceanside's purview.
Yeah, maybe that was the reason why everybody went to Oceanside in the beginning of this episode. Like the training day sequence was a nice aside. It was like a nice excuse for the journey. But in reality, it was like everyone was just hoping that they'd gotten their taffy on by then. But at this point, we're almost a decade into the apocalypse. They've known the Oceansiders for like 7 years now. You got to assume that they know how to make taffy.
Yeah, I mean, somebody out there is figuring that out. I mean, we got people that like sit around and carve letter H's into medallions. We got people that weave cloth, and we got people that forge weapons. There's definitely somebody on taffy duty.
All right, the taffy patrol is forming, as is a big army of Alexandrians and Hilltoppers, and everybody is just fighting on the beach. Walking Dead style, as everybody is training up for the inevitable war with the Whisperers. And that's like the big sequence that kicks off season 10, except for the fact that where we really begin, Jess, is space.
Yeah, this was a very Breaking Bad kind of intro, wasn't it? Like, this reminds me of nothing so much as like all of those sequences in that season of Breaking Bad where they'd have like little flashes of like the teddy bear eye in the swimming pool and the NTSB logo, and you didn't know what it was all leading up to. And they just did this very non-linearly, like, oh, look, meanwhile, up in space. And I was here for it. I thought that was kind of a cool idea, and it draws on things that have happened in real life. And it was even, I would venture to say, a little bit of a shout out to Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, there was a space storyline in Fear the Walking Dead, wasn't there? Was it Strand who was talking to a Russian astronaut or something like that?
Yes. Yes, it was Strand talking to a Russian astronaut.
Cool. Great.
I don't think it was much of a story. I think it was Strand talked to a Russian astronaut, and that was all that happened. Yeah.
But I like your comparison to Breaking Bad. I think you're right. Like, it does sort of have that season 2 cold open aesthetic, except it's all like truncated into this episode because the satellite's introduced and then it crashes and causes this huge fire by the end of the episode. Or I guess like throughout the episode, it crashes like 17 times. We just get to see it from all these different perspectives, and it causes this massive forest fire, which we will get to later on. I don't know. Do you want to posit any satellite theories now? Is this better saved for end of the episode? How are you feeling about the satellite?
I think we can save a few things for the end of the episode, but I thought it was really interesting that we did get it all in one episode. Kind of. I mean, I'm sure there will be implications of the technology, or we wouldn't have had to stop and mess with it a little bit, but I think it's really interesting. It had to be an old school Soviet satellite because most other satellites, I believe, are made to burn up on impact. And so it would have to be a pretty old one falling out of the sky. It's kind of a shout out to like all my 80s kids remember Skylab.
Yeah, I don't think I know Skylab. I was too young. I'm an 85er.
Yeah.
You're
younger than I am.
I was
probably too young for Skylab, but I have read about it. I do have a history degree. But it was basically, it fell out of the sky and crash landed, and I believe it did not cause any major injuries, but it was kind of a running joke throughout part of the 80s. Didn't realize there'd be a quiz, or I probably would have looked it up and given you more accurate information, but that was what it reminded me of.
Extremely Boston Rob smotting up voice. Insert that here, as you say, Tess.
I feel like all of our podcasting is just eventually going to degenerate into all of us trying to do Boston Rob impressions and failing.
I'm going to hold off as long as I can.
You'll join us. Join us on the dark side, Josh.
If you can.
But I do want to back up and talk about the training montage a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, it's a huge way to start the episode, obviously, and the season at large.
There's a lot of this didn't make a whole ton of sense to me, but it strikes me as a very inefficient way to kill something that you have to get a clean headshot on. You got to throw a javelin pretty hard to be assured of that clean headshot, right?
Yeah, but don't you think that they've like been like training really hard in the intervening months, like probably just like getting jacked? So like we're talking like sweet buys and tries on the people who are tossing the javelins. So they're just like showing off at this point.
I mean, you know, I never miss a chance to objectify Alden, and that dude, he's definitely jacked.
He's got rage. This is like his big Enid energy.
It's true. He's definitely working through some stuff, and he's doing it in a healthy way. But it does strike me that we had a lot of scenes of people shooting arrows at walkers and hitting him in the chest and having them fall over. And I feel like that wouldn't really happen.
I liked how they were like, archers, your turn. And then like the archers were like axe throwers and spear throwers. And like it was like slingshots as well. And like one actual bow and arrow. It reminded me a lot of this iPhone game that I play called Bowmasters, where you just like you play as all these different characters. And like it's ostensibly an archery game, where you play one player and then like the computer or someone online plays the other person on the other side of the screen. You're just trying to like snipe each other from across the way and from like different like topographies and stuff like that. But like you don't like it's not like everybody has a bow and arrow. You have like all these different weapons. It's like, oh, cool. Walking Dead just went full Bowmasters. So like for me, I loved it because I just like immediately got that iPhone sense memory. But I didn't really fully understand the full extent of the mission either, but it looked cool. We got like some sweet slow-mo sword swinging action from Danai Gurira's Michonne. Like they're implementing new cinematography, it seems like some new camera techniques. Like the blood splatter stuff was like very like, I was almost like Zack Snyder-y.
Yeah, I was thinking that, or even like with all the non-linear stuff, I was thinking sort of Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, I like that. It's probably more complimentary than Zack Snyder-y at this point.
Hey, you know, I don't hate Zack Snyder.
No, his best stuff was with zombies, too. So
very true. Very true.
So I don't know. I don't exactly know, like, how they like came upon the ship and they're like, all right, this is the spot. This is what we're going to train for and we're going to do it. And like we've got like this really glorified like paintball course that has these really disgusting sea slicked walkers that we have like stored up in this boat. And this is going to be the perfect training ground. I think, honestly, Jess, that the theory that they came to Oceanside for Taffy makes some sense. And then when they were there for the Taffy, the Queen of Oceanside was basically like, hey, by the way, we've got like a whole boatload of walkers down the beach if you want to help us clear them out. And Michonne's like, oh, training day. This will be great. This is a perfect opportunity. We'll work for the taffy.
Yeah, I think they rolled up and she's like, nuh-uh, you don't get any taffy until you deal with our walker problem.
Yeah. So taffy for everybody because they do such a great job. I do love that the first character of the season we see is Kaylee Fleming as Judith Grimes. Obviously the best character in the show right now.
I love Judith Grimes. She can do no wrong.
Yeah, at least one of the Grimes siblings does no wrong in your book this week, Jeff. We'll get there. We're getting there. We're getting there.
We'll get there. We will get there.
We're close. All right, so they do the training day, and everything's great, and then they're all hanging back at Oceanside, and Luke is making a friend, this woman, Jules, who is very openly flirting with Luke, and Luke very openly flirting with Jules. In kind, and Jess, clearly Jules is a whisperer in disguise, right? Like this is an undercover whisperer for sure.
Either that or she's gonna die very soon.
One of those two things will happen. There is, much like winning the Game of Thrones, there is no middle ground with Jules. She's either undercover bad guy or she is whisperer food in no time at all.
I really feel like that's not how Walking Dead tells their stories. I think they would want you to know if she was a secret whisperer so that you're sitting there like, oh, my God, when's he going to find out she's a secret whisperer? Like, no, she really does present as someone who is very settled into Oceanside. I feel like she's been there from day one.
Yeah, I think that that's certainly a likely outcome. I'm hesitant to like lean on old Walking Dead tricks as like predictive measures because Angela Kang has been so unpredictable as showrunner of the show. So I feel like this would be a new tactic. And obviously, like the messaging from Angela Kang and like the marketing is making it pretty clear that they're trying to go for something like a little more psychological, a little more cerebral in terms of the war between the Alexandrians and the Whisperers. And I feel like undercover Whisperer, that makes sense to me. And like, who would it be if we're trying to track that stuff in this episode? There are a couple of candidates and she's like one of the two, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. But I think it's also, I'm going to posit a third possibility to you that this was just a cute little one-off scene and we're never going to see her again.
I think that seems of all the action that they've got to get accomplished here in the season 10 premiere, why just like waste a moment on Luke having like a happy interaction with a random person we never see again? I feel like there's got to be more to the story here. It's just a matter of what the story is.
So it's not just that they're paying for Dan Vogler and they need to use
maybe. I guess you're right. It's like, we need more Dan. So that was just, they're just breaking the Dan here. But they're talking, they're happy. Daryl and Michonne are talking. They seem to be in good spirits. Nobody's heard from Maggie for a while. Guess they didn't get the press release in time that Maggie was on her way back. TBD on how all of that will shake out. TWD. And then all the kids are coming back. They've never seen the beach before. This is a very exciting time for these kids who are singing all sorts of songs and having a blast and playing with sand and pouring out buckets of sand. And oh God, oh geez, oh gross. That's a Whisperer face.
Yeah. I mean, I hate it when my kids go beach combing and bring back faces.
Terrible, terrible activity.
And this was a great throwback to like 2 minutes prior when Michonne cut the face off a walker.
I kind of thought that it was like that was
I thought it was that face.
I thought it was that face as well. I mean, I think if I've got a fairly big knock against this episode, I thought that was a little confusing because like clearly everybody reacts to it as like, oh, God, the Whisperers are back and they're not wrong. But I think going from like slice off the face, which we get to see that happen, to there being a mask in the sand that is retrieved by the kids, and that's supposed to be the big Whisperer reveal, was maybe a little confusing to me, at least.
Just a little bit.
Just a touch. So that's the first segment of the episode. This premiere is like chunked up in chapters, which is not really something that Walking Dead has done a ton of. Did you like this, that they were like doing like little title cards for every act of the episode?
I feel like they've done it a few times before, and I really think they should do it all the time or not do it at all.
Yeah.
Because this just feels more like we're trying something new. And whenever I get that taste of we're trying something new, it's like, I don't think you have full confidence in what you're doing here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that some of the chapter titles and then like sequences were better than others. Like this next one is Skin. And I guess that works because they're hunting the source of the skin. But obviously, everybody's just trying to play catch up with Bird Wisdom.
Yeah, Bird Wisdom. That's a little bit, I don't know, something.
Yeah, it was something. It was very Negan, is Bird Wisdom. But we'll get to the Bird Wisdom. They find the skin and everyone, they report back to Alexandria. Some of the people are pretty freaked out. Michonne, keeping it cool.
Until she sees a bridge and then she loses her mind.
I was going to say she has the three C's down and then she sees the bridge. She's like, nope, triggered. Don't like this at all. And she and Aaron kind of have it out on the bridge because Aaron is losing his chill, too. He's like, Michonne, I'm freaking out. Are we the good guys anymore? Are we the bad guys? What's going on?
Yeah. And this is one of those things like I could probably tell you better if you're the good guy or the bad guy if I'd known what you've been up to for the last 5 years. But you skipped over all of that. So I don't know. I can't help you. Can't like give you reassurance because I don't know what you were up to. Maybe you are the bad guy.
I think Aaron's a great guy.
I love Aaron.
Aaron's definitely a good guy. I've got no qualms about Aaron. Everything that Aaron's ever done has been fantastic. Many of these people are the good guys. Maybe a couple bad guys in the mix, but
well, it's all about shades of gray,
right? You know, true. But Michonne is saying, like, listen, this isn't about being Mr. Nice Guy anymore or not. Like, what matters here is we want to be smart. This is how I've stayed alive. This is how I've kept my people alive. We got to be smart. We gotta tolerate the border issue right now. You saw what Alpha did. If the Whisperers are back, we've been preparing for this, but we can't jump the gun. So she's trying to be the voice of reason here. But I think she's A, shaken by the bridge and like the reminders of Rick. But also, I think all of them are rightfully shaken when they go and they discover that there's a Whisperer camp not too far away.
Yeah, and I think it's more like anybody that didn't really believe the Whisperers were back, it's like, here's your confirmation. Yeah. This is happening now. But I mean, props to Michonne, because I think she had to be thinking a long time ago that she was never going to use that law degree again after civilization collapsed. And it turns out it's very useful.
Yeah, she's able to really argue her case against Aaron in this scene. She comes back. They're all coming back from the campsite, and Michonne returns. And she sees her kids. She sees Judith and RJ, and Judith is regaling RJ with the tale of the brave men who sacrificed everything so that they could all live. And unfortunately, Jess, the brave men died, and RJ did not like that very much.
You know, I feel like packing your story full of death, even in the zombie apocalypse, is a little bit much for a 5-year-old.
Jess, you had a very very popular social media moment while The Walking Dead was airing, as it involved this conversation between Judith and RJ. Did you not?
I did, and I want to take this moment to formally apologize to the child. The literal child who is playing RJ, because I apparently hurt his feelings, or I hurt the feelings of all of the people that take this stuff very personally. And I did not realize what an emotional connection people have to the offspring of Michonne and Rick. And that was my fault. But I tweeted out that I was not impressed with this child's acting skills and immediately regretted that decision to make that tweet.
Yeah. But I think, listen, you know, he's just a young boy. He's just reading his lines. He's just doing what he could do. But I also have to admit that I thought it was great when he's like, "Mommy, why did the bad man die? Why did the brave man die? I didn't like that the brave man died. Why did he have to do that?" I just thought it was fantastic. I thought that was one of my favorite moments of the whole episode. I definitely laughed. I was like, "Oh, that kid's cute." And now, he's young. He's got time. But it was a cute moment.
And I have to say, from a casting standpoint, as far as like looks wise, he definitely looks like he could be Judith's sibling. And he definitely looks like he could be Michonne's child. He looks like he could be Rick's child. I think looks wise, they got it spot on. I think he's an exceptionally cute kid. And I think over time he could really make this role his own.
Yeah, I think we'll see where they're going with RJ and everything. I mean, we have to be on high alert for anybody connected to Michonne too closely, knowing that Danai Gurira is going to leave at some point. We just don't know the circumstances surrounding her departure. Did the premiere move you one way or the other in terms of like developing out any theories? I say this having written an article with a theory about what's going to happen with Michonne. That's up at thr.com/walkingdead, and that's the shameless plug.
I think it closed some doors, which I think we got to wait till we get to the comic book zone to really go into this. But I think we had some theories that we talked about in our preview episode that really probably aren't going to come to pass given some of the things we saw this episode. And more's the pity, if you ask me. But I do think whatever happens, I think RJ is going to go with Michonne. So I think we could be looking for that kid to be on his way out as well, because I think we have struggled to find the point of RJ, and I'm going to be interested to see if there is one.
Okay. So they're all, it's a nice family moment with Michonne and Judith and RJ. And then, look, Mom, there's a comet in the sky. Oh, my God, the sky's on fire. Cool, fireworks. And Michonne's like, that's not a firework. That's a frickin' USSR Soviet satellite that's barreling straight towards us. And that's the first of a few times that we're going to cut to commercial on the satellite before we go to Chapter 3, bird wisdom.
I mean, we have to give props here to Angela Kang, because in Scott Gimple's hands, we would have watched a different person react to this satellite crashing in every episode all season long.
I'm glad that it's just done in this episode, for sure. For sure. I mean, I think that the first episode of the season, it's not inappropriate for it to be mostly an action episode that's built around a single exciting event. And it's dealt with within the space of the episode. And it's a more than fair amount of time to spend on this plot thread rather than really dragging it out across the season. That being said, of course, the season is young and we don't know how much that 5 minutes with the satellite that Eugene spends at the end of the episode is going to impact everything. But we cut to Alexandria, Jess, and we get to see that there's different wars being waged here in Alexandria, including how many there's a joke about how many men does it take to raise a baby in Alexandria. I guess the answer is three, because Eugene and Gabriel and Sadiq are all helping out Rosita with baby Coco. So that gives us a little bit of a marker for how much time has passed.
Yes, it does. And of course, you have Eugene in the Steve Guttenberg role.
Yep, absolutely. He's the Goot. No question.
Yeah, he's totally the Goot. And Sadiq, I feel like he's the Selleck.
Yeah.
And that probably leaves... Actually, no, Sadiq is the Ted Danson, which leaves Gabriel to be the Selleck.
Yeah, because Sadiq's kind of like the player, right? Like, he's the baby daddy, but he's not the, you know, he didn't do any... Like, he's not doing much in the way of, like, emotional responsibility for Rosita. But Father Gabriel, much like Tom Selleck, is in love with the mother. So I think that all maps out pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so. I think spent that's good. A lot
yeah,
of time.
You did a great job. I think that you really got it. Did you like the baby measuring sequence? Was this fun, this little montage?
Well, this kind of hit close to home for me, because I definitely tracked all of those things in an app when my son was born.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel the impulse, and I definitely tracked the longitudinal data and was like trying to predict times when he'd go to sleep and want to eat. And this is useful to do, and it's got to be much harder to do if you don't have an iPad. So props to Eugene for doing
it. Listen, if you don't have an iPad, then you at least need to have a Eugene, I think is it's one or the other.
He really serves that function, doesn't he?
He does a great job. But he's really, you know, he loves Rosita. So that means he loves this baby. And you got to imagine that, you know, a piece of this is like he's thinking, if I'm a really good dad to this kid, maybe someday Rosita will fall for me. I don't know how likely that seems to be to me.
It does not, but it's good to have goals, I guess.
Definitely important to have aspirations in the zombie apocalypse. There's a lot of stuff going on at Alexandria. Sadiq is having panic attacks. He's got some PTSD from surviving the decapitationings that happened, the border beheadings. He was the lone survivor of that incident. He has a new frenemy or a friend. I don't know. It seems like this guy is a real rascal. Dante. Here comes Dante, who we will not get into the details of which, but he does hail from the comic book. So this is a character from Kirkman and Adlard's source material making his way. And he is... he's co-doctoring the Alexandrian safehold alongside Sadiq.
What is his medical background? Because I feel like maybe he wasn't a doctor in the comics, but do we know, like, is he like Sadiq? Did he have like a year of medical school?
Yeah, I don't think that we've got any indication of his background. I don't remember him being a doctor in the comic. So I think that this is a show invention, which could be suggestive of some ideas that they're going to be implementing with Dante.
I feel like every time they bring on a redundant doctor, it spells doom for one of the doctors.
A redundante. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, if you've got a, you know, gun to my head, are we going to lose Dante or are we going to lose Sadiq? I think it's certainly possible that we lose Sadiq, but my money would be on Dante. I feel like the show likes Sadiq. They just had him survive the beheading.
Yeah, it's true. It would be kind of a cheap shot to have him survive all of that only to get killed some other way.
But I think Sadiq, he's like he's reeling from like the memories of what happened. And then Dante walks into the room while Sadiq's baby is screaming her head off. And Sadiq just like starts staring at Dante's mouth And Dante is like, whoa, you trying to make out with me or something? Whoa, Sadiq, I didn't know you were into me like that. And it's a little whatever. But I think the takeaway there is Sadiq, like, looking at Dante, like, recognizing facial features. Is he thinking that Dante is one of the whisperers?
Well, I think the staring at the mouth was probably because that's the only piece of someone's face you can see when they are wearing a whisperer mask. Right. So I think that's probably, if he's like in that headspace where he sees the whisperers coming and he sees a threat, I think in the moment he had never seen them before and was kind of focusing on the human parts of them. I think maybe that's why he was staring at the mouth.
We see that Lydia without Henry, who is she? What does she want out of life?
Apparently she doesn't want to learn how to read.
That's what we know. We know that she doesn't like school. There shall be no Billy Madison redemption story for Lydia, I believe.
That's very, very sad. I feel like reading unlocks so many doors.
I think so as well, but she's not enjoying it. She's not having a good time at school. And she gets kicked out of the classroom because Gabriel gets the call that there may have been a whisperer sighting and they need to figure it out. So they kick out Lydia. Lydia decides to work on something else that she enjoys, certainly more than she enjoys reading. And that's her forms, her Aikido that she's just self-teaching, I guess.
Yeah, we don't have Morgan to kick around anymore. I wonder how many people picked up little pieces from Morgan.
Yeah, is that Morgan's true legacy from before he left for Fear of the Walking Dead, that he just, like, everybody was like, you know, Morgan was kind of a lunatic, killed a lot of people, but he may have had the right idea with the Aikido stuff.
Well, I mean, he probably taught a lot of it to Henry. Like, maybe she's just practicing what Henry taught her.
But how long was she with Henry? Long enough to, like, know all of the forms and the moves?
That's a good question. I don't know how much time has passed, although I had tried to puzzle this out for an article that I wrote for primetimer.com. Here's my plug for the week. I wrote an article for primetimer.com about how exciting this season's going to be and how happy we are that the story is moving along. And I tried to puzzle out how much time had passed. And it was really from the day that Rick and his gang arrived at Alexandria to the end of the Savior War is something like 3 months. So that's not very much time. And then if we skip a bunch and then we get into the Whisperer War, and that could have been probably no more than a few weeks. So that's not really enough time to advance one belt, let alone several.
I think it was a pretty short period of time that Lydia knew Henry. So for her to have, like, picked up Aikido from Henry feels like a lot. She also has, like, the nunchuck extension on her staff. Like, who gave her the cool staff?
That's kind of an advanced move, too. Like, you could tell she doesn't really know what to do with it. Personally, I don't know what to do with it. How do you maneuver a staff with a nunchuck on the end?
I hope that we get a backstory for the new Aikido master at Alexandria, because that person exists. He or she is out there for sure.
Yeah, it's true. Like, it could be, maybe it's Nabila.
Yeah, that would be great. I would like that. That means
we don't know what her story is yet.
That's it. That's the backstory until proven otherwise.
She spent some time with Morgan. Like, he lived at the kingdom. He taught her what he knew, and she ran with it.
Jess,
there you go. That's
Jess. I love it. I'm into it. I think that's the gospel until somebody shows up and tells us a different story. Until somebody else baby birds the true wisdom into our ears. Which brings us to Negan. Of course, Negan's on work release. He's gardening. He's threatening to brain people with tomatoes. I thought that was a funny line.
It's pretty good. And he's wearing basically the outfit that he was wearing in Carl's flash forward.
Yeah, it's pretty close to Carl's vision of the future. He also looks like my father-in-law in that suit. The great Dave Fox, big denim guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody rocks the Canadian tuxedo like Negan.
Yeah, he's really doing a great job. It's like it's Dave Fox at the top and then Jeffrey Dean Morgan right beneath him. And those two guys and Brian Cox does a pretty good Canadian tuxedo and Super Troopers. It's those three against the world. But Negan is going to, he's catching wind of the fact that clearly something's up. Tides are shifting. He goes back to his jail cell at the end of the day, and Father Gabriel comes to essentially confide in him. Negan's trying to baby bird some of his old leader wisdom into Father Gabriel and tell him, like, don't send Alexandria into full panic mode until you need to. Just try and keep it calm, keep it relaxed. There's no reason to cause a panic. It's self-interested, certainly to a degree. Negan is concerned that now that he's getting to see the light of day, that he is a little more exposed to everybody in Alexandria, and they could turn the tables on him if things start to get ugly, and they may see him as the old enemy that they can just turn on. But he's also, I think he's got a point, right? Like, they don't know if the Whisperers are back yet. We don't know what the official scoop is from the people at Oceanside. Just remain calm until you absolutely can't afford to anymore.
Yeah, and I feel like Negan knows how to handle a threat.
He's had kind of his experience. He's had experience, yeah. For sure. And then the comet, the satellite comet strikes across the sky, and Eugene does an amazing, like, Napoleon Dynamite Eugene run, which is so fun.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Eugene who taught Lydia those nunchuck skills.
I mean, he has his own set of sweet moves. I feel like he has some kind of internal, like, Coach Chi type thing.
Yeah, I think so. All right, chapter 4, Sea Dogs, which is literally dog at the sea. As we're going to see Connie and Kelly and a bunch of people, they're, like, bringing in fish on Oceanside. Kelly, I guess, is starting to lose her hearing. Angel Theory, the actress who plays Kelly, is hard of hearing in real life. So they're bringing that into the show. And she and Connie being sisters, they're certainly bonding on that. I enjoy this. I haven't been, you know, on the podcast long enough to you know, say that I love Lauren Ridloff as Connie. So any Connie that we get on this show, I am here for it. I loved that moment between the two of them being like, this is our superpower. We're going to be fine.
Yeah. And I loved Angel Theory had a really adorable tweet where she said that that's something that people close to her have said to her. And she felt like Kelly needed to hear it in that moment. So it was great that they included it in the script.
Yeah, I loved it. I'm curious to see where it's going. It's played a little tensely in this moment, where she's, like, backing up and she's, you know, she falls into the rocks because she can't hear that she's, she's closing in on it. She's not quite as used to this circumstance as her sister is. Is this foreshadowing something that's coming up, or is this just something that Kelly is going to be dealing with throughout the season? I think it's a little TBD, but at the very least, they're going to have another person that they can communicate with in the form of Daryl Dixon, who is learning ASL. He's got the handbook, Jess.
It's very cute, and it shows, like, Daryl has come a long way, because Daryl was for many years somebody that didn't want to communicate with anybody ever, and now he's, like, learning a whole other language to communicate with people he likes. So that's great. It got a little weird and shippy for me, and I know that you're on that ship.
I'm on that ship like Carol.
I know you are, but it's such a weird disconnect. I feel like I've known Daryl Dixon for a decade now, and he's never shown any interest in being in that kind of relationship. And so it's going to take some doing to
yeah,
really
it
sell
is.
That.
Yeah,
me.
It is. Listen, I think they've got a lot of work to do is all I'm saying. I don't know.
Okay. I will be interested to watch it develop.
Yeah.
And I have faith that the show is capable of selling this to me in a convincing way, but it's going to be a very interesting season for Norman Reedus to have to process all of these complicated new emotions through Daryl.
Yeah, it can't happen next week. You know, I don't think it can happen even 3 weeks from now. I think it needs time still, but I think, like, even the fact that, like, Kelly gives Connie a face and Connie's like, oh, come on, shove off, you know, like, I feel like they're definitely working towards it, and I think that they're working towards it in a way where they know in the writing room, in the writer's room, that this is a big deal, that if they're going to go in this direction for Daryl to open himself up to somebody like this, that it's not nothing, that it's going to matter. And they have to play it smartly. I think so far they are. And look, it's totally possible that, like, Connie dies before Daryl has a chance to, you know, before that has a chance to become anything. Lauren Ridloff's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe now, Jess. She's making a movie. It's very possible that she's not going to be long for The Walking Dead just because her career, much like some of these other amazing actors who've been on this show, her career just might take off. And she's like, yeah, I can't do The Walking Dead anymore. I think that that's on the table for sure. And then that's just going to set Daryl back 17 years.
Yeah, I guess it's like two steps forward, one step back with him.
I think it's possible.
I think we also have to say Daryl's not allowed to get intimate with anybody until he takes a bath.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. Just like talking about all like the raw seagulls he's eaten and stuff like that. Like you could really smell Daryl Dixon.
I mean, he's definitely not bathed since the days when he was wearing a necklace of ears.
No, he definitely still has some of that chupacabra stink on him. he definitely wears that on his sleeve and occasionally on his neck as a necklace made of severed ears.
Yes.
We get Carol. We get Pirate Carol. It's not Pirate Michonne. I know this is what we wanted,
no,
but it's Pirate.
Not.
It's Pirate Carol. Carol's been on the high seas. She's the sea dog. She's been out there ever since the death of her son, Henry, Ezekiel, waiting like a good boy for Carol.
Like Penelope for Odysseus.
Yeah, much like that. And Carol gives him like no time at all. Like, hey, good to see you. Cool. See ya. Got to talk to Daryl.
Gotta go hang out with my buddy. And they go off in the woods. And here's my question to you, Josh. So Carol used to constantly try to run away by herself. And now she's decided she thinks maybe she will run away with Daryl. Is this progress for her?
Yeah, I think at the very least, like she knows that she doesn't want to be totally alone. She likes being around some people, but I think that she wants to be around people that she knows can totally take care of themselves. And not people who would be at risk of decapitation like the late, great Henry. And I think that she feels pretty good about Daryl's ability to hang in there in the world of the dead.
I mean, the one guy that doesn't have to cover himself with zombie guts to walk around in a herd because he just smells that bad.
Yeah, he just has that skill already built in. Good strategy, honestly, Jess.
Yeah, yeah, you can just. Don't ever bathe for 10 years.
Yeah, I think I would try that in the apocalypse.
Yeah, I think some people will just be forced into it, but you know, they have houses, they have plumbing.
Yeah.
He has no excuse.
No, he doesn't really have much of an excuse. But yeah, she's saying like, oh, I want to go back out there on the open sea. You should come with me. And Daryl's like, no, I want to go to New Mexico. New Mexico is where it's at. Really.
Speaking of Breaking Bad.
I know, we're really pushing that Breaking Bad and Walking Dead crossover from the days of the blue crystal in Merle's drug supply all the way back in season 2. We're really coming back. Next thing we know, an El Camino is going to be ripping through Oceanside and picking up Daryl to go for a ride.
Yep, that's definitely the next thing.
Daryl and Carol are making friendship bracelets, and it's cute. I like these two together. I like Norman Reedus and Melissa McBride because they're clearly good friends in real life. And I think that there's a reason why people love these characters together. And 10 seasons in, when we're running out of familiar faces, or at least like old school familiar faces on this show, I'm glad that these two and their dynamic has stepped up into center stage. Like the Daryl and Rick friendship was so key for so much of The Walking Dead. And with Andrew Lincoln gone, I think you still want like, you know, back to back, just us two against the world, that kind of dynamic in the zombie apocalypse. And you really get that here with Daryl and Carol. I really like to see it.
Yeah, I'm here for any time the two of them are together on screen because it does seem like their bond is very genuine.
Forest fire. They see the satellite fall and then they got to go into the forest to stop the fire from spreading because it would be detrimental to every roadway and all of this stuff. They would be blocked off from Oceanside and that would be awful. And everybody
fire
shows
bad.
Up. Yeah. We see like Daryl like throw an axe and destroy a tree by throwing the axe at the tree, which felt excessive. Like you could just probably chop the tree down.
Once again, their skill with ranged weapons to do all manner of things. I'm going to cast a side eye on that. I mean, I know he spends a lot of time practicing, but yeah, one strategically thrown axe to fell a tree. Yeah.
We know that axe throwing has become very popular in the United States of America
and Canada.
Yeah. And Canada. Like, do you think that in the apocalypse, art is imitating life And in their free time in Alexandria, they've got an axe throwing arena where people can prepare for this. And Daryl like steps up. He's like, okay, this is my moment. I'm a great axe thrower. Everybody knows this about me. Everybody's counting on me to chop this tree. I got to look really cool doing it.
I think that's entirely possible. I mean, we don't know what he's up to most of the time. He just hangs out with his dog. I'm sure that I don't think he does spend a lot of time practicing throwing axes, because I feel like that would be problematic. If you're throwing something that looks like a stick, your dog's going to run after
it. Oh, true. Yeah. I mean, that's risky. Good thing dog wasn't around. At least I don't think dog was around when Daryl threw the axe, because that could have been very bad. It's like horses running back into the barn type of stuff.
Yeah, that's no good.
And The Walking Dead has a bad track record with horses as it is.
Indeed. R.I.P. Buttons.
Oh, R.I.P. so many horses. All of the horses. That poor deer. That deer did not have to die. That deer
could have fed 200 people,
yeah.
Josh.
You know what? I Googled it, and that was the top search result, that a deer, how many people can a deer feed? And it's 200 people. And that's like the exact search result. So I would love to know what was like the inside story on how that line came together. I think we may have figured it out.
It was a CGI deer, Josh, and CGI deer are considerably meatier than real deer.
Yeah, it's true.
But also that thing looked like it was diseased, so maybe that's for the best.
Well, it had been shot in like the chest, so it was on its way. It was on its way out. But I felt like it was alive when they were picking it apart, and I felt like, oh, that deer did not have to die. That was for nothing. That's really for now.
I think the deer did have to die. I think after you shoot it in the chest, it kind of does have to die.
Well, yeah, but it didn't have to get shot in the chest if they weren't going to feed it to 200 people.
Yeah, yeah. That deer was going to die one way or the other, and it probably would have been better if it died and fed the humans. But yeah, I don't think there was a happy ending for Bambi.
Jess, do you have any idea how many pounds of taffy that deer could have supplied?
I don't want taffy made out of deer.
Listen, desperate times in the zombie apocalypse. You just haven't tried it yet.
Get away from me with your venison taffy, Josh. That's not okay.
Yeah, the daffy. So they prevent the forest fire. They make Smokey the Bandit proud. They probably cross some literal and figurative lines with the Whisperers in the process. They are able to retrieve some parts from the fallen satellite. Eugene wants 20 minutes. He gets 5. He wastes about 30 seconds talking with Luke. He's not happy about that. I feel like satellite scraps. This is Chekhov's satellite scraps. This is going to come into play at some point later in the season.
I mean, I have a theory. We'll get into the comic
okay,
book
cool.
zone.
Great.
But yeah, I think he wouldn't have gotten 5 minutes if there wasn't a good reason for it.
And then the episode ends where Carol and Daryl are going off for a walk. It seems that they're at the same chasm, right? Like this is the old Whisperer territory, right? This is like where all of the walkers should be, isn't it?
Yeah, that's where the herd was when they like went and looked down and like there was a giant herd. It's like, this is the herd that's going to eat you if you don't do what we say.
And they're gone.
Yeah, they went away.
They're not there.
But there's one person there.
Yeah, that's really good timing that Carol is out there on her own, just hanging out, getting a good breeze in. And so does Alpha. Alpha has the same idea. These two people were such polar opposites. If they could just put their baggage aside, they'd realize they have so much in common. They're both there for a breath of fresh air. And then they see each other across the way and they stare each other down. And we're left with this very ominous note for the first episode of the 10th season of The Walking Dead. A tense scene for the 10th season of The Walking Dead.
I guess so. This felt a little high school drama clubby, though. Like, just put them on stage together and, like, cast the spotlight on them as they glower at each other. I don't know. It was a little much.
The hands on the hips and stuff, like, just being like, ooh, I'm so mad at you. Oh, yeah, well, I'm really mad at you.
Yeah, and, like, the stage directions, you know, stares defiantly into the middle distance.
right. I think a little corny, the scene itself, suggestive of where this show might go in season 10. Like, this is the person who beheaded Carol's son. So it could be very grim moving forward, depending on how these two women choose to react moving forward. So I think like the fallout of it, I'm very intrigued to see where they go from here. I do not disagree that it looked a little hokey.
Yeah, I mean, it is the showdown I want to see. Like, I don't want anybody else to be the one that takes out Alpha. Or at least they need to fight. They need to confront each other.
Well, that leads us very nicely into our feedback. We have a few feedback items, as we mentioned, a little thin at the start of the season. We want to make sure that we are hearing from you guys. TWD@postshowrecaps.com is our email address. You can also always tweet at us. I'm at Round Howard. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. And you should also tweet at postshowrecaps and hashtag ESRecaps to get in your feedback. But this is from Hillary, who wrote in and said, I'm going to need to see Carol and Alpha going head to head, quote unquote, after that final stare down. I hope that's the direction The Walking Dead goes. How much do you expect, Jess, that the season ahead is going to... Sorry, I don't mean to do the head puns.
I think you do.
I really didn't. I caught it. I feel bad. The coming season, season 10, how much do you think that this is going to be like kind of like a round for round grudge match between Carol and Alpha? A decent amount, a little bit, a lot of it?
I think we're going to see some of that. I think it's real Molly Weasley, Bellatrix Lestrange kind of energy that we're seeing coming to fruition here.
Very here for that. Even though Alpha kind of looks more Voldemort-ish with the bald head.
She definitely does. But I definitely think that Carol is going to play a big role in whatever happens to mete out justice to Alpha.
I hope so. I would like to see the full on knockout drag out fight between the two of them. Like the Daryl versus Beta stuff. Like that's what I want to see with Carol versus Alpha, aka throwing each other onto elevators.
So is this is like the tag team wrestling match we want to see. In this corner, we got Daryl and Carol. And in this corner, we got Alpha and Beta.
Yeah, put them in the simulator. Send them up against Dave Bloomberg. This is what I want to see.
Yes, it's definitely why they lost.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I want very, very badly.
Look, man, I believe you were the one that took me out of the Royal Rumble. So
yeah, with my mustard jorts on or whatever the hell it was I was wearing. Really,
look, I had overalls, so
it was a strange day for all of us here.
It was a lot.
The extended Rob Has a Podcast family. It was. All right, from Slothy McSlothface writes in. The premiere was better than the last several, but I was still disappointed overall. Once again, we're focusing on the children. It's dragging the show down, in my opinion. And good for Daryl getting a love interest, but when Michonne fell in love, she became soft. If they make Daryl a marshmallow, it'll be over. Do you agree with that assessment that Michonne became soft when she fell in love with Rick? And do you agree with the assessment that Daryl is on his way toward becoming a marshmallow?
I disagree that it made Michonne soft, but I do agree that there is potential here for Daryl's character to go very wrong if he is given a love interest and if that is his story arc. But on the other hand, I think this speaks to what you were saying earlier, Josh, where it's possible that Daryl opens up and falls in love only to have the door slammed in his face when something terrible happens to Connie.
Yeah. It'd just be classic. Classic Daryl.
It would. And it would just, every time he kind of lets somebody in a little bit, he loses them. And it's, he and Carol are well suited to have their friendship bond because I think that's been Carol's story a lot as well.
Daryl's like the Kurt Clark of the zombie apocalypse. Everything he touches gets canceled after canceled. A season. That's the Clark curse in action on Daryl Dixon.
Wow.
What about Slothy McSlothface's assertion of the focus on the children? I didn't feel like there was too much of a focus on the children.
No, I mean, we got a bit of it, but it's also, I think it's interesting what the children are up to in this world because we've worked very hard to get to a point where children can even be in this world.
Yeah.
And as much as I think RJ is kind of an extraneous character, and maybe I'll be eating my words by the end of the season, I do think it's like this is a world that's safe enough. I mean, it's still not a safe world by any means, but it's a world that's safe enough that kids are going to school and playing on the beach and telling folk tales about their absent fathers. And I think that's an interesting perspective to have. I don't want it to go like full Muppet Babies, but I'm okay with it from time to time because I think having a variety of perspectives, and I think this also speaks to the kind of show that we're supposed to get with the untitled third spinoff.
Right.
Where it's like, these are kids who have grown up relatively sheltered and don't understand what the world is like and how we got to this point. I think that's an interesting idea to play with, and I'm okay to have it played with for as much as we're getting it. I don't want more of that, but this is a good amount.
Did you watch the trailer or read anything about the third Walking Dead show? It was revealed a bit at New York Comic Con. There's a trailer that's out. Scott Gimple has like pulled the curtain back a little bit on what the show is about. I guess like it takes place at the same time as the flagship. So everything that's happening right now on The Walking Dead, the events of the third series, they're unfolding simultaneously. So they're much closer in time than Fear and the flagship. Trailer has a really funny button at the end of it. I don't want to spoil it if you haven't seen it yet, but it's really, really great.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen it yet, but
you should check it out. It has.
I've read a bit about it.
It's ridiculous. It ends on a moment that feels like very true to how I would react in the zombie apocalypse. So I liked that. I don't know. We'll see how that show goes. I thought that the trailer was fun. I have to be convinced a little bit on there's a lot of Walking Dead.
I'm not sure I'm going to commit to podcasting about it.
We'll see.
All I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens when we get closer to it. Phoebe Nugent wrote in and said, "What the F show am I watching? I had to check when I saw the satellite to make sure I wasn't watching Star Trek or Fear the Walking Dead or something.
Or Breaking Bad.
I guess. You know what? I saw a little bit of like, this is so out of place. What is a satellite doing on The Walking Dead? And I think it's hilarious that all these people are acting like the words space junk have not been part of the DNA of The Walking Dead from the very first episode.
That occurred to me as well. Yes. You know?
So this is we've just been building towards this the entire time. They're geniuses.
Is it just falling action from here on out then? We got our space junk and now we can just go home?
Yeah, literally falling action. Everything's falling out of space and it's almost over. It's just kidding. We're here for years. Just Joe, with our last bit of feedback, wrote in and says, "It feels like I'm watching a show with several supporting characters, but no main character." Yeah, that's where we're at.
Yeah, that's about right.
You know,
somebody's going to step up. I feel like this is going to be Michonne's season. I think we see a lot more Michonne. I think she's kind of the undisputed lead at this point. But we've also got Daryl and Carol, although they took a very supportive role. But I do think that I think this is Michonne's season.
I think it probably is going to be largely Michonne's season. I think it's also going to be a lot of Daryl, a lot of Carol, a good amount of Negan. And I think that there are supporting characters who have like stepped up to like recognizably closer to lead positions, like Father Gabriel, like Aaron, like Eugene, maybe a little bit of Rosita, but not quite yet. Christian Serrato's fourth billing on the show at this point.
Congratulations to her.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it just your mileage will vary based on like, do you care about those characters? For a lot of people, the answer is no. For a lot of people, the answer is yes. And I like those actors a lot. And you wrote about this in your Primetimer piece, that the absence of Andrew Lincoln, like rather than like trying to like fill that void with like a new series lead, it allows a lot of these actors to step forward with bolder storylines and more defined storylines and more time in the spotlight. And I actually do think that it's making the show more creatively interesting than it's been for a couple of years. So I'm definitely in the camp of like, yeah, I'm here for like Aaron in the apocalypse. That seems fun to me. Sure, I'm here for like one-eyed Gabriel, like actually being like a sensible human being and not a total coward, and like hanging out with Negan and like having awkward interactions with Negan. I'm totally here to see like prison reformed Negan and like what is he gonna do? We've got Judith Grimes on the show. I'm loving that character. So it's a lot of supporting characters, but for me, mostly these are supporting characters that I like a decent amount. I'm pretty happy with them.
Yeah, I mean, you could do worse for supporting characters. And I want to put a pin in something you said about Aaron, but I'm going to save it for the comic book zone.
All right. Well, he may be putting a pin in his stump in the future as well, based on the trailers that we've seen. for season 10. Let's not waste any further time. Let's start getting in to the comic book zone. If you do not want to follow us into the comic book zone, we will tell you that this is you've reached the end of the line. There's comic book spoilers ahead. Nothing else except for comic book spoilers for the rest of this podcast. We will be back next week talking about week 2 of season 10 of The Walking Dead. We want your feedback. TWD at postshowrecaps.com. Tweet at us. Hashtag PS Recaps. Make sure to tag at postshowrecaps as well. And subscribe if you have not done so already to The Walking Dead podcast on Post Show Recaps. Without further ado, let's talk comic book spoilers, Jess. And I turn the vessel over to you. You can tap into your inner Pirate Michonne and steer the ship because it's Pirate Michonne in the comics and not Pirate Carol. And are we a little salty like Taffy about it?
That's pretty much the first order of business here, is we have to kind of temper our expectations for Pirate Michonne. I think it's not going to happen now because now we have Pirate Carol. Pirate Carol, way less epic than Pirate Michonne. I'm just saying, you took the most iconic moment of the entire comic series and probably the single best panel and just watered it down. And I usually, I'm kind of here for it when they remix things from the comics in new and interesting ways, but it's like, this is like when I was watching Game of Thrones season 2 and I got to the House of the Undying episode and I'm like, this is going to be so cool and epic. And then they kidnapped her dragons and gave her a 3-second House of the Undying flashback. This is that for me. This is like, I'm waiting for these great moments to show up on the screen and the best one didn't come.
Yeah, I think I've been kind of braced for this. I had been feeling for a couple of years that we'll get the pirate moment, but it's probably going to be Carol. Like, she's going to leave in some capacity. Yeah. And she's going to come back. So I didn't mind like the character substitution, but I agree that the moment could have been a little more epic than it was. Because I'll never forget turning that page in the comic book. And like after, so because like we've jumped through time, we don't know what's happened to Michonne. People are talking about how Michonne is gone. And like, it's a little bit of a mystery of, oh my God, is she dead? I hope she's okay. We just have no idea. And then she freaking shows up as a pirate. She's just like, yeah, got like one leg up on the bow of the ship. And the wind is clearly just like blowing through her hair. She's got like the double ponytail. She just looks awesome. And like, I love Carol, no question about it. And I think that Pirate Carol could be very cool. And if like she like organizes like a fleet to go after the Whisperers, will be badass as hell. But just like as far as the introduction of Pirate Carol, left a little to be desired for me.
I mean, as much as I would love to see a naval battle on The Walking Dead, that could be very interesting. But Carol wasn't even Pirate Carol. Carol was like Gorton's fisherman Carol. She went out fishing. She wasn't even, when Michonne went out and Michonne was the pirate, she wasn't looting and pillaging, but she was exploring and trading and she went to other communities and you knew there was more out there. It was a greater world. Yeah. And what is Carol doing? She's fishing.
Trust the Carol fisherman. Yeah, she's just doing it. You know, she's just trying to get away. She's upset about what happened. Henry, I don't know that I'm necessarily all the way out on there being a pirate Michonne. I think that like what we could be being set up with at this point is like the introduction of the idea that you can leave The Walking Dead via pirate ship. And so like Michonne finds out because like maybe there's like some satellite footage that Eugene is able to pull of Rick in a different community, which would be a highly specific, ridiculous thing for Eugene to discover from this randomly fallen satellite. But let's just go with it.
Sure.
But, you know, for Michonne to like find, oh, Rick's alive. He's out there. I got to go off after him. And then like the final image of Michonne of the season is Pirate Michonne-ing her way away from Oceanside.
I guess. I don't see it happening now. I think you can only have one pirate per season.
I think we need to be open to the possibility that Michonne is going to die. That's my theory. I know like we've now like introduced the way that you can leave The Walking Dead bloodlessly, you know, thanks to, you know, Lenny James leaving for Fear or Andrew Lincoln leaving for the movies. And if Andrew Lincoln's going to be in the movies, how could they resist the urge to, you know, keep the door open for Danai Gurira to do the same? But in the Whisperer War, in the comics, very iconic death for Andrea, who's married to Rick in the comics. And I think that there was a lot of setup for Michonne to take that on here in the show. You know, being on the bridge and being reminded of Rick's sacrifice, hearing Judith telling RJ the story of her dad and how he died and how the brave man doesn't really die. He lives on inside you and inspires you to be brave. And Michonne saying, you know, I would do anything to protect any of you. I would do anything for you. I love you that much. I would do anything for your father, too. And the anything for your father piece of it is like a lingering bit of hope for me that like she'll find out that Rick is out there and she'll leave to go and find Rick. But I'm more inclined to think, Jess, that Michonne is like going to put herself on the line to save everybody, to herd the walkers like Andrea does in the comics, and like get bitten in the process and die as a result. Like maybe kind of like that that weird trippy Tyrese episode from back in season 5. And maybe there'd be like, you know, not unlike, honestly, Andrew Lincoln's final episode in season 9. That's where my head's at right now. I kind of feel like the show just set up Michonne for a death.
Well, I think it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I do think it's more likely that we will get a Madison Clark style death for Michonne if we get a death for her at all. Like one of the ones where we're going to see a very impossible scenario, but we don't habeas corpus. So it's very possible that, you know, she definitely, it looks like a thing where nobody could escape it alive. But if we ever needed to bring her back or put her in a movie, we could.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever fully closed the door on Michonne.
I think it would be really risky to do that. It would just be very surprising that like you would close that door. But I mean, Danai Gurira might want to close that door. She's not going to need to come back to The Walking Dead. She's going to have
her life's fine.
Her life is fine, right? Like her life is great. She's going to have an outstanding career. And I'm thinking also about like what's going to bring Maggie back to the show. If Michonne dies and there's like a big funeral for Michonne or something like that, and we know that there has been like some kind of rift between Michonne and Maggie, the show has talked about that a little bit, but it hasn't really explored exactly what went down in the big time jump after Rick's quote unquote death. Could like Michonne die and word reaches Maggie and Maggie comes back to the area because she's like, wow, a lot has happened. Jesus is dead. Michonne is gone. Like, I got to show back up.
Yeah, there's people in like weird skin faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Time to come back when the weird skin faces start terrorizing your town.
So just something to track. I think it's we got to be watching to see what's going to happen to Danai Gurira on the show. And I'm a little nervous. And I hope that you're right. I hope that they leave the door open. But I'm a little concerned that maybe they're not going to. What else from a comic book perspective caught your interest in this episode?
Well, I saw an interesting thing. I can't take full credit for this because I saw it on Reddit. But somebody made the comment that visually, Aaron has undergone an interesting transformation. And they compared Aaron on the show. His appearance is very similar to Rick in the comics. And as soon as I saw it, I couldn't unsee it.
Yeah, he's got the beard. He's got the one hand. I think he's going to make better use of the one hand than they ever did with Rick in the comic. So do you think that he's going to like take on the trajectory of Rick moving forward?
He might, or it might just be that this is a very deliberate visual shout out to Rick, who's no longer with us. I can't really tell. I do think that Aaron is kind of priming himself to be a little bit more of a leader than his comic self was. And I think there is a void with no Rick. So if Aaron stepped up and was the new leader and became more of a presence on the show, I think we've gone on record as saying we're not mad at that.
I'm not mad at that at all. I love that. I'd be thrilled to see Ross Marquand stepping up. He's such a good actor. So just like give him a ton to do. I'm very, very here for it. What did you think of the arrival of Dante, played by Juan Javier Cardenas? So maybe the wand off could work if he pans out to be, you know, like a really killer character.
I guess, but he's such a douche. Like he's such a douche in the comics, and he's like, I am surprised that he is not more of a douche on the show, but I guess give him time. He's already like kind of meets some questionable jokes. And I mean, the thing that Dante kind of anti-endeared himself to me in the comics was the day that he says to Carl, "You never forget your first piece of ass."
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, you are 100% class, mister.
Yeah, he's very similar in the show so far with the way he's talking to Sadiq.
I mean, if they're bringing back Maggie, she seems to like douches.
Yeah,
now.
I don't know. I hope that she stays away from Dante. I just don't see the chemistry. It's hard. We love Maggie. Maggie too good for Dante, I think. But I feel like,
But she was in the comics, too.
I know, she was in the comics, too. There was a theory, at least I had the theory in when I was reading The Whisperer War in the comics. I think other people did too online. It was such a thing that Beta never took his mask off, that whoever he was underneath had to be fairly important. And it ends up being a little bit of a gag when they do reveal it, that he was just like a famous person. He was like a basketball player or something like that. But I remember thinking that it was going to be like a reveal that he had infiltrated like the community, and that he was Dante, and like Dante was going to stand revealed as Beta at some point in the comic. And obviously they went a different direction. And obviously Juan Javier Cardenas is not Ryan Hurst, who plays Beta. So I'm not suggesting that Dante is Beta, but do you think with the remix approach that the show often takes from the comics, is there a possibility that the show's version of Dante is a whisperer?
I can't imagine that that's a thing, although it's an interesting idea, and it's certainly, we're supposed to distrust him because he's such a douche, and because Sadiq was having the flashback and he was not handling it well. I think it's certainly a possibility. It seems to me to be kind of a slim possibility. I don't think Secret Whisperer that has been there all along is kind of a dirty trick that I don't know that the show is capable of doing. But then as I say this, I'm remembering a show that did actually do this. And I do not know if this is a show that you were ever into, Josh, because you are a little bit younger than I am. But there was a story arc in Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I didn't get too far in Deep Space Nine. I'm regularly told that I need to go back and change that.
You do. You definitely do. There was a story arc, and I won't give it away, but one of the main plot points throughout the series is that there are aliens that are changelings, and they're shapeshifters, and they're able to take on the persona of anybody. And there is a reveal midway through one of the seasons that one of the main cast has been a changeling and was replaced by a changeling and has been that way for 10 episodes. And it was kind of a dirty trick then, but it made narrative sense once they explained it. And then you're kind of like, oh yeah, I guess that makes a little more sense now. And I guess they could do that here.
Okay.
I guess.
Okay. They could go full Deep Space Nine.
And it would, there are worse shows you can borrow from.
Yeah. What would the Wandoff equivalent be on Deep Space Nine?
That's a good question. I think I have to workshop that as well. But
the Ferengoff.
The Ferengoff, the Odoff.
Yeah. The Dr. Bashiroff. I don't think that's as good. I watched a little bit of it. I liked what I saw, but I don't think that I got there's like a turning point, right? Where you get far enough in, it's like things start to really heat up.
You can write off the entire first two seasons. Like there's a couple of good moments and like jump in, like maybe even midway through season three.
Okay. Hot tips on your Deep Space Nine rewatches.
Yeah, it starts to take off. Like someday when you and Mike Bloom are done with your Lost rewatch.
Yeah.
I will welcome you and Bloom, and the three of us will do a Deep Space Nine rewatch.
Cool. I like it.
In like 2045.
Yeah, I know. We're not
put it on the books.
We're not going to be here. How about the satellite? You said you had some comic booky thoughts on that.
I had some comic booky thoughts on the satellite. I think that it's possible that there is high tech communications gear in this 1980s Soviet satellite. Maybe not, but I think maybe it boosts the signal enough that we are talking to the Commonwealth on this like superpower space satellite boosted radio. That was my theory.
It's a good theory. I think that that's like almost a slam dunk theory.
I think if we're going to use that stuff for anything, I think your idea of Eugene finding satellite photos inside the satellite, that makes a lot of sense as well. But I think there's probably antenna gear and communication stuff in there that they can use to boost their ham radios. And I mean, we did see a mysterious voice on the radio at the end of last season. We got to circle back to that. But I'm suspecting that we need a little more juice to really get that going.
Yeah. If Eugene finds satellite photos of Rick on the satellite, I'm going to throw up a little bit because that's ridiculous. There's just that would be crazy. That would make almost no sense at all.
It would, but I think what would make more sense is that if there is any kind of recon footage on that satellite, there may well be something hinting at the mysterious forces that we've seen both on Fear and in Walking Dead that, you know, you have a big enough compound with a helicopter, that's going to show up in a satellite, right?
Depending on where you're looking, I guess. As Saeed Jarrah says, if only we were all wearing license plates.
I guess so. I think if it was aimed at the right spot at the right time, it wouldn't be totally out of the realm of possibility.
I like your first theory better. I think you're right. I think use parts from the satellite to boost the radio signal and increase the ability to communicate with the Commonwealth, especially because I think that there's been some casting news. Paola Lazzaro is playing Princess from the comic.
Yes, we're getting Princess.
We're getting Princess. At some point in season 10, we're getting Princess, which means I don't think that the Whisperer War is going to define the full season, which I'm happy about. I think that's exciting.
Good news.
Unless maybe we get like a bottle episode, like a Pittsburgh episode, and it's just like Princess in Pittsburgh, which would be awesome. I would be thrilled for like the fully like Walking Dead goes renegade and goes to Pittsburgh with a brand new character that we do not know and just does like a full episode there. That would be super fun.
Full East.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That was a great episode, right? Like, I think that they could do that.
It was.
I think they could do that. But either way, I think it means if Princess is going to be on the show, then we are firmly en route to the Commonwealth for season 11. So that we just need to be paying attention to like how are they beginning the process of kind of like on ramping us to the Commonwealth.
We got momentum. I think that we are trucking along here, and I am so happy that we're not just going to have war with the Whisperers for 26 episodes.
I think like we'll dominate a lot of this season. I expect yes. I think we'll probably be talking about the Whisperers through like at least like midway 10B, right? Like, I don't think that there's any way that it ends much sooner than that. But I don't know that it will go all the way through the end of 11. Not necessarily, I don't think.
I don't think so. I think we might be done with it by the end of 10. I think that would be okay.
Anything else before we wrap up?
Oh, I just want to say I said something colossally dumb before we got into the comic book zone about how I want Carol to be the one that takes out Alpha, because I really don't. I want Negan to be the one that takes out Alpha.
Yeah. It is such a good moment from the comic. It really, really is. It really is. I think, look, they're like, I think like the straightforward action movie satisfying thing to do is for Carol and Alpha to really go head to head. But that's like what you expect. And like the way that Alpha dies in the comic book is so unexpected that to not do that for the show, it is just so iconic. And like they really did biff Negan's introduction to the show, like by stretching out the Neganing across seasons and across like a mm-hmm. long summer cliffhanger by like diluting the Glenn death by having Abraham die there as well as the answer to a cliffhanger that you could have just Googled the answer to. To like then like to come back now and do that scene very faithfully of Negan cozying up to Alpha and just decapitating Alpha in like the cold dead of night with no warning at all would be absolutely remarkable. I'm here for it.
And Angela Kang's mother did not raise any fools, so I have to think that's coming.
I hope so. I really hope so. I think some easy pot shots to take at the premiere, but overall I enjoyed it. I had a fun time with it. I think that they're, you know, I think that the storytelling energy from season 9 seems to be alive here. I'm curious to see where they take the Whisperer War stuff. And I think we're off to the races here as well, Jess, as we're moving into season 10.
Arrows pointing up on all counts.
Yes. Archers ready. Throw your projectile objects, whatever that is. The guitars, throw them at the walkers as well. All right. That's going to do it for us here on Post-Show Recaps, our Walking Dead coverage. We will be back next week talking about episode 2 with full spoiler-free stuff and also full comic book spoiler territory as well. Jess, what are you working on outside of here? You got some other podcasting that you're doing.
Yeah, I got a little other podcasting that I'm doing. Last week, I had the distinct pleasure of getting to talk to all three of the judges on the Paramount Network's Ink Master Grudge Match. And that was just a lot of fun. If you are a fan of the Ink Master franchise, I think there's a lot of great material in those interviews that you will enjoy quite a bit. And even if you're not, it's a good introduction. The series, it's a spinoff of a reality show that is itself probably not the pinnacle of reality shows, but it's a show that I love very much, to the point where I did the deeply weird thing of flying across the country and getting a tattoo from one of the artists that I like from the show. So that's a thing I did. And then I podcasted about the spinoff series, Ink Master Grudge Match, which is airing on Tuesday nights. I've been live tweeting it. It's a lot of fun. You get to see some great artwork and you get to see some people being ridiculous. That's kind of all I'm here for. And then I'm doing some writing over on primetimer.com. Most recently, I did write about The Walking Dead, but I have quite a few other pieces in the hopper that are coming out. If you go over to primetimer.com, click on features, there is work there from myself and many other excellent writers.
All right. So check out Jess's podcast on Ink Master. Do you tell the story on the podcast about flying across the country for a tattoo?
I do not, because these are not, none of the artists I interviewed are the actual people that did the tattoo.
Okay.
But it's something I mentioned in passing. And, you know, anytime you guys want to hit me up for the story of that, I can talk about it for hours. Cool. Because also the artist spilled a lot of tea while he was tattooing.
Ooh, I like it. I like tea.
Nothing that could ever go on a podcast.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. So check that out. Check out Jess's Primetimer stories as well. I'm covering Walking Dead over at The Hollywood Reporter, thr.com/Walking Dead. We got a lot going on here at Post Show Recaps. Mr. Robot's final season has started. Antonio Mazzaro and I, we are recapping that. So check that out if you're a Mr. Robot fan. Antonio and I are going to be talking about Watchmen over at the series regular podcast on The Hollywood Reporter in the not too distant future. So if you are not subscribed to series regular, I recommend you do that. We've got the Lost podcast that we have referenced here on this podcast already today. Down the hatch, we are up to Solitary. We're up to Hurley Builds a Golf Course, a classic. So that is coming up on Down the Hatch. Succession is very near the end of the line. Emily Fox and I will be getting together soon to recap the penultimate episode of Succession before next week's finale. So it's all happening. Make sure you're subscribed to Post Show Recaps, all of those feeds, the main feed, so you don't miss any of it. Jess, anything else?
That's going to do it for me, Josh.
That's going to do it for me as well. Until next time, everybody, take care. Goodbye.